The new paradigm for financial markets, the credit crisis of 2008 and what it means. Author, George Soros. The paradoxical, cognitive and manipulative functions. We are in the midst of the worst financial crisis since the 1930s. In some ways it resembles other crises that have occurred in the last 25 years, but there is a profound difference. The current crisis marks the end of an era of credit expansion based on the dollar as the international reserve currency. To understand what is going on, we need a new paradigm. The currently prevailing paradigm, namely that financial markets tend towards equilibrium, is both false and misleading. The core idea. Our understanding of the world is inherently imperfect because we are a part of the world and we seek to understand. People with imperfect understanding interact with reality in two ways. On one hand, they seek to understand the world in which they live. I call this the cognitive function. On the other hand, people seek to affect the world and change the situation to their advantage. I consider this the manipulative function. Reflexivity. For a function to be uniquely determined, it needs an independent variable which determines the value of the dependent variable. In the cognitive function, the actual state of affairs is supposed to be the independent variable and the participant's views the dependent one. In the manipulative function, it is the other way round. In reflexive situations, each function deprives the other of the independent variable which it would need to produce determinate results. I have given the two-way interference a name, reflexivity. Reflexivity will be particularly useful in understanding the behaviour of the financial markets. Whether we speak of a circularity or a feedback mechanism, it is a matter of interpretation. But the two-way interaction is real. The circulatory is not an error of interpretation. On the contrary, it is a denial of circuitry that is the error. The theory of the reflexivity seeks to correct that error. Fallibility. People are participants, not just observers, and the knowledge they can acquire is not sufficient to guide them in their actions. They cannot base their decisions on knowledge alone. That is the condition I describe the new word, fallibility. Without fallibility, there would be no reflexivity. If people could base their decisions on knowledge, the element of uncertainty that characterizes reflexive situations would be removed. But fallibility is not confined to the reflexive situations. In other words, fallibility is a more comprehensive condition and reflexivity is a special case. People's understanding is inherently imperfect because they are part of reality and a part cannot fully comprehend the whole. Reflexivity revisited. There is a distinction between thinking and reality. There is a two-way connection between the course of events and the participant's thinking. That left out a two-way connection between the thinking of the various participants. To take that connection into account, I found myself obliged to distinguish between the objective and subjective aspects of reality. The former refers to the course of events, but the latter refers to the participant's thinking. There is only one objective aspect, but there are many subjective aspects as there are participants. Radical fallibility. How can we act with any degree of confidence when we may be wrong and our actions may have unintended adverse consequences? It would be much more desirable if we could rely on doctrine or belief system that lays claim to the ultimate truth. Unfortunately, the ultimate truth is beyond the reach of the human intellect. Ideologies that promise absolute certainty are bound to be wrong. Only this insight can stop people from adopting such ideology. The equilibrium theory. Economic theory seeks to imitate the natural sciences. It aims at establishing timelessly valid generalizations that can be used reversibly to explain and predict economic phenomena. In particular, the theory of perfect competition modeled itself after Newtonian physics by specifying the equilibrium between supply and demand towards which market prices tend. The equilibrium point is reached when each firm produces at a level where its marginal cost equals the market price, and each consumer buys an amount whose marginal utility equals the market price. Supply, demand, and expectations. To make up for the deficiency, modern economists resorted to an ingenious device. They insisted that the demand and supply curves should be taken as independently given. They did not present this as a postulate. Rather, they based their claim on methodical grounds. They argued that the task of economics is to study the relationship between supply and demand and not either by itself. Markets versus regulations. Because financial markets do not tend towards equilibrium, they cannot be left to their own devices. Periodic crises bring forth regulatory reforms. That is how central banking and the regulation of financial markets have evolved. While boom-bust sequences occur only intermittently, the reflexive interplay between financial markets and the financial authorities is an ongoing process. The flow in equilibrium theory. Equilibrium theory is not without merit. It provides a model with which reality can be compared. Economists have made many valiant attempts to adjust their models to take account of reality. The so-called second-generation business cycle models have sought to analyse boom-bust situations. It is time for a new paradigm, and one is readily available for the theory of reflexivity. The theory cannot hope to gain scientific acceptance, however, with a fundamental reconsideration of what can be expected from a theory dealing with a social phenomena. Renouncing the unity of method. The belief that markets tend towards equilibrium have given rise to policies which seek to give financial markets free rein. They call these policies market fundamentalism. And I contend that market fundamentalism is no better than Marxist dogma. Both ideologies cloak themselves in scientific guise in order to make themselves more acceptable. They use scientific methods to manipulate reality, not to understand it. Ideologies like Marxism do not qualify as scientific. They did not recognise that mainstream economics can also be exploited in the same non-scientific way. By endowing social science with the prestige of natural science, it allows scientific theories to be used for manipulative rather than cognitive purposes. The new paradigm. Instead of always being right, financial markets are always wrong. Periodic crises lead to regulatory reforms, authorities are sluggish in normal times, alert in emergency, and misconceptions play a significant role in the making of history. One of the major differences between the new paradigm and the old one is that the new one takes a more cautionary approach to the use of leverage. The theory of reflexivity recognises the uncertainties associated with fallibility of both regulators and market participants. The prevailing paradigm only acknowledges known risks and fails to allow for the consequences of its own deficiencies and misconceptions. By applying the postulate of radical fallibility to financial markets, one can assert that instead of always being right, financial markets are always wrong. Markets have the ability, however, to both correct themselves and occasionally to make their mistakes come true by reflexive process of self-validation. That's how they can appear to be always right. To be specific, financial markets cannot predict economic downturns accurately, but they can cause them. When do the reflexive connections, which are endemic in the financial markets, turn into self-reinforcing? Historically, significant processes which affect not only prices in the financial markets, but also the so-called fundamentals that those prices are supposed to reflect. That is the question that the theory of reflexivity has to answer, if it's to be of any value.